Blog Talk Radio.
Of God, and welcome once again to another episode of Is This the Church? And I am your host, Sister AJ, and I'm very happy to be able to broadcast to you today, because for the last couple weeks there's been problems with being able to connect on Blog Talk, and I hadn't been able to do a show for a bit. So I'm very happy that things are back up and running, at least for the time being. And so I wanted to go ahead and get a show in this week. So here we are on a Saturday afternoon instead of the usual Wednesday afternoons that we're here. And so we're going to continue with the subject that we've been talking about here for a while, concerning artificial intelligence and the end times and how all of this technology is converging to possibly set up the things that the Antichrist and that beast system will use once it comes into power, whenever that is, because we all know that we don't know the day nor the hour when the Son of Man will come, but he wants us to be ready and prepared. That's why he gave us these things in his word to be on the lookout for, to be prayerful, and to be discerning concerning a lot of these things that we see before us, because a lot of it is conditioning, hurting us in a certain direction. And so we have to just know that while some of these things are being presented as a good thing for the good of mankind, we also have to know that man, our sin nature and unredeemed man, we're wicked, and we're capable of all things. So it may start out with the best of intentions, but there are wicked people who want to bring to pass a certain world that they're trying to set up for all of us. So we just want to keep that in mind as we're watching these things. So what we're going to talk about, we're going to continue with a subcategory of this as inventors of evil things, as it talks about in Romans 1:30. And we're going to talk about a particular individual that is a big part of that and some of the things that they've been doing lately, which is one Elon Musk. And he is a very interesting individual. I personally don't know how to take him a lot of times. I know he's done some things that are considered good, and people really like him and some of the things he's doing, particularly after he purchased Twitter and about a year ago, and a lot of conservatives in particular who had been kicked off Twitter for various reasons, and he restored that freedom, and I put that in air quotes. But I was always, well, you know, that's a good thing, but I don't know about him, because he's what is or was affiliated with the World Economic Forum. He was in a part of their young leaders training some years ago. So I don't know how connected he actually is with them still, but I'm just a bit cautious. As the Bible says, we should be discerning. We should always be mindful when these people do what appear to be good things for the good of humanity. I'm always worried when I hear them say that. So without further ado, we'll get started. And the first video we're going to listen to is from Michael O'Fallon, and he did a video, kind of a cautionary tale on Elon Musk around the time when he purchased Twitter last year. And he, while that seems like a good thing, he just wanted to put out some cautions before we just automatically jump on the bandwagon, because it could be leading us somewhere we may not want to go. So without further ado, we'll begin the show.
We are now being quickly transitioned from a physical, real, analog world and into a digital, hyperreal simulation of a fake world, a world of make-believe, where perception is reality, and where the perception is always being manipulated and diverted from the actual, the verifiable, and the true. And truth is no longer truth in the objective sense. And the correspondence theory of truth is being discarded for alchemy. In other words, truth is equivalent to what amounts to operational success. In the transition of our world into more of a total technocratic state. And so, we are being pulled along into one mass psychosis event and into another, not knowing what to believe and what is fiction and what is true. And one thing that we should have learned by now is that whatever the technocratic magicians want us to pay attention to with their right hand, be sure to pay attention to what their left hand is doing as well. Over the past several months, most of the sane world has rejoiced as the ownership of Twitter was transferred from a fully public company to the masterful right hand of genius billionaire, entrepreneur, and inventor Elon Musk. As Elon Musk entered Twitter headquarters with the sink in his arms, which is code for let this sink in, the changes were nearly immediate. Musk fired the wokest woke workforce in the social media landscape, second only, of course, to the communists at Facebook, and the changes didn't stop there. Musk removed the filter on public discourse over all information regarding treatments and controversies with COVID, freeing men and women alike with differing opinions, not just to blast and troll one another, but to have actual debate. Now, this, strangely enough, in our post-COVID world, was something akin to a great leap for mankind. And he didn't stop there. Elon Musk then restored the account of the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, an account that should have never have been deplatformed. We were talking about the sitting president of the United States. That should have never happened, ever. For the sake of engagement, disagreement, and debate. Because we do need to debate these things. And if you were going to actually delete somebody's account, it would probably be someone like Joe Biden, because you know that Joe Biden's not the one who's actually tweeting. And Musk has continued to open up Twitter by declaring amnesty on previously banned accounts. So now the likes of the Babylon Bee, Project Veritas with James O'Keefe, and our good friend and contributor James Lindsay were now freed from digital prison, freed from the sentencing of having to communicate on Truth Social, freed from the gushing fountain of anti-Semitic discussion at Gab. They were now free to discuss, debate, and offer their opinions to the world once again. It was almost as if a tiny sliver of cognitive liberty was just restored to mankind. But then our Marvel comic Avenger Elon Musk announced that there was now another threat, the threat of Apple, and that Apple may be making moves to remove the new free and open form of Musk-owned Twitter from the Apple's App Store. This was a threat, a major threat to free Twitter. But after a meeting at Apple's headquarters in California with Chinese Communist Party business boss Tim Cook, it was announced by Musk that all was well, and that Twitter would remain on Apple-based product platforms. But then another threat arose, this time from a nursing home on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., where the Biden administration announced that it would be monitoring and keeping an eye on Twitter because misinformation is now the enemy in the postmodern news world. Yes, misinformation, that evil force that may be objectively true, but goes against the official Ministry of Truth that is now centered in Washington, D.C. So our American hero Musk has responded, stating that he would now release the logs of information regarding what Twitter was told to do and did proactively to squash the Hunter Biden laptop scandal. And, of course, that meant that they interfered with the 2020 presidential election. What a bold stand Elon Musk was taking. And the news spread like wildfire across the news services and social media. It was as if nothing else was going on in the world for 48 hours. Elon Musk was going to take down the information deep state. Order your popcorn because it's going to be retribution time. And sure enough, it was. What was revealed by Musk through Twitter's internal documents was that the FBI and the Biden campaign had communicated with Twitter to ban any stories regarding Hunter Biden's laptop, and to label stories and tweets that were covering the fact that Hunter was, let's say, involved with several dealings with Ukraine and with Chinese companies, but also that he was completely compromised sexually, and that compromise would lead to a compromise of the soon-to-be president, Joe Biden, and the Democratic National Committee power structure. And so with help from Democrats and authorities at the FBI, Twitter employees squashed the story. They deleted tweets, and from direction that was given to them, from Democrats, as well as from officials within the FBI, they banned people from talking about the Biden laptop on Twitter and deplatformed several high-profile people like James Woods, who were reporting the story. So in essence, Musk opened up a massive can of worms. And in reality, this was just the tip of the iceberg, because this was just one story within Twitter. And we aren't even touching what happened with COVID yet. And this was just at Twitter. So what about all the other social media platforms? What about all the other mass media platforms that did the same thing or worse? And this great revealing, which should, by the way, result in jail time for many and an immediate impeachment of the entire Biden administration, was done by Musk, in his own words, to restore public trust. And the public will want to know more. They will want to know about what happened during COVID and during mandated vaccinations. They want to know about the deplatforming of Dr. Peter McCullough and others. And it is very possible that Musk will reveal all this in the future. And there is another aspect to this. By restoring public trust, Musk is setting up Twitter to be the only trusted social media platform. And I mean the only one trusted, especially by conservatives. It is good business. So while Musk might be doing what he is doing for the good of all mankind, at least that's what he's saying, he is also making decisions that will result in Twitter being the go-to media platform for nearly everything. And Musk is very clear that he plans on expanding Twitter into a social media powerhouse like WeChat is in China. WeChat has been described as China's app for everything, and a super app because of its wide range of functions. WeChat provides text messaging, hold-to-talk voice messaging, broadcast messaging, video conferencing, video...
I just wanted to interject here in about what he said about Elon intending to make Twitter the go-to one-stop app for everything, and that can be a little bit concerning for me anyway, because when you funnel everything and merge it all together into one thing, wouldn't it make it easier for anyone who's interested in monitoring and controlling things? It would be easier for them to do that if you have to go to one place for everything. And remember, the way China has everything set up, that appears to be the model for where the rest of the world is trying to get to as far as the surveillance and control and all these things. So I just wanted to interject that. Let's continue.
Games, sharing of photographs and videos, and location sharing. It is also the digital way to pay for things in China. And it is heavily monitored by the Chinese Communist Party. So there is that. So while all of this trust and all of these good things are happening at Twitter because of Elon Musk, there should be a bit of caution. Now, I'm not saying that this is necessarily what's happening with Musk, but if you take a look at history, things like this have happened before. And so we should at least pause for a moment before jumping with both feet in to basically hand over everything to Elon Musk and Twitter. So a bit of caution here as we just think over the last couple of years, because we have just gone through the process of funneling several times. And let me explain what I mean by funneling. We've had a deadly virus, well, supposedly deadly. I've had it 3 times now. And you were told that the only thing that you could do to stay safe is lockdown and destroy the economy, separate from your family members. That was number one. Well, that was followed by number two. George Floyd died now, So now we have to introduce race Marxism into every facet of our civilization. That was number two, which then was followed by number three, it isn't safe to go out, so you need to mail in all of your ballots. Which, of course, was followed by number four, the election was secure, and if you say anything that contradicts the official position of the political, social media, corporate, and faith-based cabal, then you are an insurrectionist. Which, of course, was followed by number five, the only way out of the pandemic is through these wonderful and effective vaccines. If you get the vaccine, you're not going to get the virus. So you must be vaccinated if you want to participate in society. So it was another funnel, which then was followed by, you must hate Russia and protect the sovereign borders of Ukraine. This means that the United States will have to give up oil, grain, transportation, all sorts of things to beat the villain Putin. That was number six. And you could almost say that now, number seven, all social media companies are corrupt except Twitter. You must go to Twitter, and Twitter will replace all of these non-trusted woke social media companies. I mean, it almost sounds like that, doesn't it? And in many ways, a lot of what Musk is saying sounds strangely familiar. Like the, quote, we must restore public trust and there must be transparency line. And if you are a student of history, you might remember that around 70 years ago in communist China, similar things were said. It was called the Hundred Flowers Campaign. And what communist Chinese party head Mao Zedong had done in the first 6 years of communist Chinese rule is that he suppressed, oppressed, and crushed any dissent. He crushed those that opposed the cause of the revolution. But tensions were growing high in China. We're talking about a massive country, a massive landmass that you have nearly a billion people at the time. But tensions were growing high in China. And this is before the digital age. It's a massive amount of land that had to be covered and a tremendous population. But tensions were growing high under this oppression, especially amongst the Tao and Buddhist class that had their freedom of worship curtailed, and also with the journalist-educated class that were basically silenced by the Communist Party. The general mood of the people was frustration and anger. So Mao Zedong in 1956 begins the Hundred Flower Campaign. The beginning of the Hundred Flowers movement was marked by a speech titled, On the Correct Handling of Contradictions Among the People. It was published in February of 1957, in which Mao displayed open support for the campaign. The speech encouraged people to vent their criticisms as long as they were constructive rather than hateful and destructive. Mao stated something that sounds eerily familiar to what Musk said just a few days ago. Mao said, quote, let 100 flowers bloom. Let 100 schools of thought contend. Our society cannot back down. It could only progress. Criticism of the bureaucracy is pushing the government towards the better, end quote. So in the statement, Mao was saying two things. First, he was saying that in the Hundred Flowers campaign, every school of thought in China, capitalist, socialist, Confucianist, Buddhist, Taoist, should all compete against each other openly and vigorously. In his proclamation of the Hundred Flowers campaign, Mao alluded to the Warring States period back around 400 BC or so, when numerous schools of thought competed for ideological supremacy, not to mention military supremacy. So in essence, Mao wanted there to be conflict within groups that were now united in their grievances that their speech was being suppressed against Mao. He wanted those united groups to fight and compete with one another. In other words, he wanted to ideologically balkanize previously united groups, set them against each other. Secondly, Mao encouraged open and often criticism of the Chinese communist government. So by the thousands and thousands, the complaints came in about how the Chinese government does this and how the Chinese government does that, how capitalism was much better model than socialism. For nearly a year, maybe more like a year and a half, the Communist Chinese Party collected every complaint from every person who wanted to complain about the state of life in China under the Chinese Communist Party and Mao Zedong. And then, abruptly, in mid-1957, the Hundred Flowers campaign was ended with a bang. And Mao and the Communist Party knew who every enemy of the state was. And Mao and the Communist Party knew where every enemy of the state was. Citizens were rounded up in waves by the hundreds of thousands. They were publicly criticized, condemned to prison camps for re-education through labor, and many were executed. The ideological crackdown reimposed Maoist orthodoxy in public expression all over China. The consequence of the Hundred Flowers campaign was that it discouraged dissent and made intellectuals reluctant to criticize Mao or ever criticize the Communist Chinese Party ever again. The anti-rightist movement that shortly followed after this was probably caused by the Hundred Flowers campaign, resulted in the persecution of intellectuals, officials, students, artists, and dissidents, meaning average folks that maybe liked capitalism better, maybe liked life before the Communist Chinese Party. They were all labeled rightists. The campaign led to a loss of individual rights, especially for any Chinese intellectuals educated in Western centers of learning. Another important issue of the campaign was the tension that surfaced between the political center and national minorities. When the criticism was allowed during the Hundred Flowers campaign, some of the minorities activists made public their protest against Han supremacy, or it's been called Han chauvinism as well, which they saw as the informal approach of party officials towards the local specifics. And this tension was stoked for the purposes of furthering division. And it put the Communist Chinese Party at the forefront of both control and control through fear. And so, being a student of history means that you are burdened with the lessons of history. And you remind those that don't possess a knowledge of history that there are some rather familiar patterns that seem to be emerging. Even from a very trusted source, who's probably a good guy, but these are patterns that you're starting to see with what's happening with Elon Musk. So we should question some of these patterns that are emerging because Western civilization is being put through something that is akin to a Maoist struggle session. And basically you're looking at a gauntlet of fakeness of what can be referred to as active measures. But there's something else that was going on. Something world-stopping huge is happening at the same time. So while we were focused on Elon's purchase of Twitter and Elon's creating a, well, sort of a Hundred Flowers campaign on Twitter, at the same time all of this was happening, just a few days ago, possibly the biggest news of the century Elon Musk announced that Neuralink was ready for FDA approval and human trials. And with all the other announcements made by Musk and all the other news that was created by an enormous amount of public trust with Elon Musk, this might have been the most consequential news story of the last 100 years. Elon Musk, and this is just the truth, but Elon Musk is a transhumanist proponent. And we could be on the edge of the end of human history and the beginning of something else. That's something else that could spell the end of cognitive liberty. And while we have all sorts of other historical references that we can make for other news happening in our world today, there is no other historical reference to the combination of mind and artificial intelligence and the creation and reading of hyperreal human thought. There is no other reference except one: the imputation of the Holy Spirit, which is to confirm that we are now playing God. And all the sick, twisted dreams of the Gnostics, the Hermeticists, of Rousseau, of Marx, of Wells, and especially of Alice Bailey, are about to become hyper-reality. So what is our response? Well, our response is to unite with those that value human freedom. Unite with those who want to preserve our nation. Unite with those who want to preserve human autonomy and sovereignty. And pray that the Lord will enlighten many along the way. Because the sands and the hourglass are few. And we must win. Now, we will be talking about some of these things in Phoenix, Arizona this week, with me and James Lindsay, Mike Young, Patrick Wood of Tech.
Okay, that's about it with that video. And I wanted to start with this because of we're going to get into Elon a little bit today and the cautionary tale that he puts there, because a lot of these things we're seeing have been done throughout history in these what I'll call hostile takeovers of the governments and of these countries, like what he talked about in China. And what I'm thinking and is to be careful not to fall into the Elon Musk trap. Could this be a trap? All these things with Twitter and people are flocking to it now, and especially what they call quote-unquote conservatives. Could this be a trap? And along with that, he mentioned Neuralink and how Musk is into transhumanism, apparently, and we'll get into some of that as we go along here, but I wanted to stop here with Elon Musk first, because he's got his companies, a lot of them are in the forefront of all this technology that they're in, the AI that they're using. So he mentioned Neuralink, which is an implant that he wants to put in the brain. And last year, they announced that they were going to begin human trials, and now they've moved actually into human trials. But we're going to go through those, some videos that talk about it, and bring you up to date to what's happening now with it. But the first video I wanted to listen to is Elon talking about technology. And here recently they've been meeting with senators in the government. We listened to some audio on that where they're talking about governing AI and controlling it and all the problems and the pitfalls concerning AI. It's almost being set up as some sort of bogeyman. But anyway, he was in those meetings to talk about governing AI. But one thing he has said about AI in the past, this video we're about to listen to was about 6 years ago, but it's still important to just show how he thinks. And what he's saying in here basically is in order to beat AI, the best thing to do is to merge with it. So let's give this a listen.
In AI, we will be left behind by a lot.
That is Elon Musk, the inventor and entrepreneur behind such futuristic endeavors as Tesla, SpaceX, and Hyperloop. And as you heard, Elon Musk has AI, artificial intelligence, on his mind these days. He says AI machines could soon outsmart us all, and his philosophy is if we can't beat them, we should join them by implanting AI computers directly into our brains.
One of the solutions is to have an AI layer. If you think of, like, you've got your limbic system, your cortex, and then digital layer, sort of a third layer above the cortex, that could work well and symbiotically with you.
Of course, turning humans into cyborgs may sound like the stuff of science fiction, but then again, that is Elon Musk's forte. So would he develop this kind of technology himself?
Somebody's got to do it. I'm not saying that I will, but somebody's got to do it. Somebody should do it. And I mean, if somebody doesn't do it, then I think I should probably do it.
Well, it appears he has. Later this week, Elon Musk will be letting the world in on his latest venture. We do know that it's called Neuralink, and for more, we are joined by science journalist and futurist George Dvorsky, who has been covering this for Gizmodo. George Dvorsky is in Oakville, Ontario. Hello.
Hello, thanks for having me this morning.
So what are you expecting Elon Musk to announce later this week?
Well, I certainly expect some more details. Right now, the so-called Neuralink is quite vague in terms of what this is supposed to look like, what it's even supposed to do, aside, of course, from some of the comments that Musk has made in recent months. Specifically, though, what I am expecting to hear, though, will be, I guess, the initial approach towards achieving this. These chips that will be implanted in our brain and what we hope to accomplish with them. Initially, it's quite conceivable that Neuralink will be working not to enhance or to even, you know, add AI to our brains initially, but to actually become therapeutic. These same technologies can be used to treat, say, Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or even seizures, for example. And I think that's a good pathway into this particular area. But knowing Musk, of course, and knowing the kinds of visions that he has, he's not going to be content to stop there. And with the same sorts of technologies, you can now start to perhaps modify other aspects of cognition, things like memory and intelligence, even, for example, transmitting thoughts to and from a computer. Just thinking about it, you could transmit your memories and your thoughts to a computer. It's difficult to say if Musk will get to that level of specificity in his comments later this week, but that's certainly what I'll be looking out for this week.
Well, George, his venture is to develop something called NeuroLace. Can you help us picture what that is?
Because he used the word lace there, I'm imagining that it is going to be a kind of mesh that will be overlaid over certain parts of the brain. As we know, the brain isn't just this big piece of mush that does everything and anything everywhere. Our brains are broken down into different modules. So, for example, if you put this mesh area around the motor cortex, the area that controls movement, then this lace would pick up those signals. When we say, for example, I want to move my finger or I'd like to move my leg, the lace will pick up those signals and it will then transmit those signals, I would hope, wirelessly, because no one wants to have wires sticking out of their heads. And we already do have chips in animal models, for example, that can transmit wireless signals to a receiving device, namely a computer, hence which is why we're using the word interface here. So it would look like that, kind of a mesh. If not a mesh, or the lace could also conceivably be a literal chip, a literal brain chip that rests at a specific area of the brain.
Well, we're talking about something surgically implanted, though, eventually.
Absolutely. In order to get the kind of fidelity, the kind of the power of the signals move, let's say, an artificial arm or to even transmit our thoughts, we're going to have to get right there into the brain. I mean, we do have what are called EEG technologies today, which is like a cap you can wear on your head. But the amount of information that can be extracted just through your electrical signals externally is extremely minimal. You might be able to make a gesture like you're thinking of moving to the left or you're thinking of moving to the right. But no, if you want to get down to the levels that Musk is talking about, we've got to get right into the brain itself.
Well, you know, we've got somebody waiting in the wings who's already using technology where the brain can control a limb through or the brain can control movement of a machine. So what would be different with this technology? What would he really want to use it for?
Well, I mean, he wants to save the world, apparently. And, I mean, right now, he, as I mentioned earlier, there's going to be a therapeutic aspect to it. That's going to be wonderful. And he has listed this company as a medical firm. So they are going to be producing medical devices at first. And, of course, this is a multi-million dollar industry. So he knows what he's doing by, you know, becoming one of the first to market here. But as Musk has said, you know, artificial intelligence is progressing rapidly, and we're getting to the day, maybe 20 years from now, maybe 50 years from now, but we will get there eventually when artificial intelligence exceeds human capacities in virtually every way. And Musk's solution is an interesting one. He's not the first to suggest this. Other futurists have also suggested this, is that the best way for us to be able to control and contain our artificial intelligence is that if you can't beat them, join them mentality. We will merge with our machines. So the idea here that he literally believes that we can kind of save ourselves from perhaps subjugation or some kind of an artificial intelligence disaster by augmenting ourselves along with our artificial intelligence. And that way we can kind of keep up with them should anything go askew in the future.
Do you see any resistance to this goes forward?
Most certainly. I mean, as I'm sure that your listeners are aware, that this issue is fraught with ethical difficulties. Everything from how do you find test subjects who are willing to have chips implanted into their brain or these meshes implanted into their brain? What kind of levels of consent can you get? I mean, at this point, are humans being treated as a means to an end in order to, let's say, stave off the threats posed by artificial intelligence? What kind of animal testing would be required, through these kinds of experiments? And, of course, there's the broader, more philosophical question as to what this means to our humanity. What does it mean to us as humans? You know, for example, these sorts of technologies don't just stand to improve our intelligence to, let's say, Einsteinian levels, where we are these mathematical, logical geniuses. These technologies, they have the potential to utterly transform what we are as humans and enter into the realm of the so-called post-human. In other words, this kind of entity that exists after humans. And
that, I'll just interdict, that's pretty much the goal of transhumanism, to be able to eventually transcend who we are as humans. And what does that make of humans? Because we are created in the image of God, but now what happens when we have these men trying to play God, start tinkering around with certain things, the brain and control of it and what it can do through this chip, and also even DNA and those types of things as well. It's man as God, man transcending who we are as humans and becoming more godlike, more superhuman, if you will.
At this point, I mean, we're talking thousands, if not even millions of times, greater levels of capacity than current humans. So we have to ask ourselves right now, how will these technologies alter who we are as humans? In what ways could that be of benefit? In what ways could that be detrimental? So it opens up a whole area of discussion, for sure.
Well, we'll keep the discussion going. George Dvorsky, thanks for your thoughts.
My pleasure.
George Dvorsky, science journalist and futurist. He's in Oakville, Ontario. Brain-to-brain or brain-to-machine interaction may be Elon Musk's latest passion project, but my next guest has been doing pioneering work in that field for decades. Miguel Nicolelis is a professor of neuroscience at Duke University. He also runs a lab in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and that's where we've reached him today. Hello.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning. How soon do you think we'll be connecting our brains to computers?
Well, we have been connecting our brains to computers for a while, since the late 90s at least. But what I have heard so far, either in the announcement and the commentary that we just heard, you know, is really far removed from reality and far removed from what we consider, you know, as a scientific field. Of brain-machine interface is the name of this field. Basically, we cannot download our thoughts or upload, you know, all the works of Einstein in our brains and suddenly become a theoretical physicist that can win a Nobel Prize. This doesn't exist and probably will never exist. Neither should we be worrying about the possibility that artificial intelligence, which is all totally based on digital logic, may one day overcome the human condition. That is also preposterous because we don't work based on digital logic. And we simply cannot be threatened by machines that never ever will acquire the notion of what is to generate knowledge or to process information the way we do. So this is these are all scenarios that sound beyond science fiction. It sounds pretty preposterous to me.
And tell us what you're doing, though, because you're working with monkeys, and they are actually able to move things. What does your work do?
Yeah, we have been working with monkeys and humans for a while now, and we can, exactly, using brain-machine interfaces, we can record motor intentions and allow subjects, animals or humans, to control the movements of robotic arms, robotic legs, even virtual bodies through these brain-machine interfaces. But we are talking about movements and simple movements. We are not talking about, as I said, downloading our memories, which cannot not be done because these memories are embedded in the tissue of the brain and cannot be extracted by any recording device that we have so far. And I don't believe whoever will have anything that can do that.
So the application of what you're doing is for people with that. This would be reparative, right? This would be about
Absolutely.
People who are quadriplegics, paraplegics, who can suddenly move limbs that, am I
yes,
right?
Exactly. We have developed, first of all, in the 90s, we developed brain-machine interfaces to study the brain, to investigate the basic principles of physiological principles of how brains operate. And then we suddenly realized that we could apply this into to rehab patients that have suffered devastating lesions of the central nervous system, and that's exactly what the field has done. Our lab has shown first with upper limbs and now with locomotion that, in fact, you can use EEG in the case of locomotion to get paraplegic patients to control exoskeletons and to walk. And this effort, the most important aspect of this effort has been that you can induce partial neurological recovery in these paraplegic patients by letting them use these brain-machine interfaces in a routine kind of training. So exactly everything that is working really in this field is geared towards medical applications. And the fact that someone is considering the hypothesis of implanting healthy human beings crosses a variety of ethical boundaries that I think will never be accepted by any board anywhere in the world.
Well, Kisa, let me ask you just a few more questions in the limited time we have. So the
sure.
machines you're working with now, brain signals are sent to machines to move them, to move the limbs then.
Yes.
What about the reverse? Can machines feed information directly into our brains?
Well, in animals, we have shown that you can send signals back to from a robotic or a virtual arm back to the brain, but this is a very limited kind of information that you can send. We are just learning how that can be done. We also have shown that you can exchange information and you can combine information from multiple brains to achieve a particular task. We call that a brain net. But again, the amount of information, the quality and range that you can send back to the user of a brain-machine interface system is very limited and is nothing close to uploading a thought, uploading a language, or any kind of knowledge. That doesn't exist.
Are you at all worried, though, about the unintended consequences of that technology?
Oh, I'm very worried. I'm worried about this type of announcements that seem to be just self-promoting marketing tools and to take a field that is very serious, and it has put a lot of effort to, you know, propose things that are not even science fiction. They're bad. They're really not well taught. And this mesh that Mr. Musk has been talking about has been tried once in a mouse preparation, and it is several decades from being used in humans. So it's very concerning. It's very worrisome.
And but given how much you have advanced with your research, is it totally off the charts to say that the research could get to the point in the future where the kinds of scenarios he's talking about could exist with our brains?
Well, the scenarios of rehabilitation, of course, they will come, and they're already here, and we will see more of it. I have no doubt about it. The field is progressing very nicely, and it will help millions of people in the future, I have no doubt. Talking about augmentation of healthy human beings, a lot of what I heard, both from an announcement and from what the media has talked about, is not real. It's not going to happen. Besides, the rationale for suggesting the creation of this company is bogus, is baloney. Machines are not going to supplant human beings. This is a kind of hype that has been going on for a few years that looked funny in the beginning, but now it's starting to look pretty dangerous to the point of suggesting experiments in healthy human beings that are basically unethical.
Miguel Nicolelis, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Miguel Nicolelis, professor of neuroscience at Duke University. We reached him in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where he runs a lab on this very issue. Well, when you start down the path of boosting brain power through artificial intelligence or even just musing about it, you arrive at hefty ethical considerations. James Giordano is a professor in the Department of Neurology and Biochemistry. He's chief of the Neuroethics Studies Program at Georgetown University Medical Center. He's in Washington, D.C. Hello.
Hi, Anna Maria. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm curious to know what you're thinking. What are the ethical implications of this technology, first when it comes to safety?
Well, I think, you know, Mr. Dvorsky has raised an interesting question. Is this safe? And clearly there have been ongoing studies looking at brain-machine interfaces and brain implants, and it is a neurosurgical procedure. So I think all of the necessary safeguards that go into neurosurgery are necessary. But that brings us to the next point, which is, who are we doing this in? Are we doing this with people who have a pathological condition, for example, a neurological degenerative disorder or brain trauma that would necessitate the implant? And the answer there is no. So we have to balance safety with need.
But how would that be ethically different from other surgery?
Well, in many ways, it isn't. I mean, the idea of neurosurgery carries with it its own ethical burdens, of course, all the necessities that would go into any medical consideration. But as Mr. Dvorsky has mentioned, and of course as Professor Nicolelis had mentioned, the intent here is not necessarily, at least completely, for therapeutic benefit. It's towards some form of competition with AI and or some form of human enablement or enhancement. And then you have to really take a look at, is this necessary or not? And I think the jury is still out on that. I tend to side with Professor Nicolelis in saying we really don't see such a threat coming from AI, at least not one that's realistic with regard to being able to threaten or put at risk the human condition.
If we get to the point where this could actually be something, and I'm saying if because Professor Nicolelis has made the point, this may just be fantastical, who would even have access to technology like this?
Well, this is a huge question, Anna Maria. I mean, the question here is who's going to get it and who isn't. And in many ways, what you're really seeing is a broadening of the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And this would then be the neurologically enhanced haves versus the non-neurologically enhanced have-nots. So characteristically, you would then say that those individuals who could afford this type of enablement or enhancement would be the ones to get it. Whereas if you're looking at a therapeutic situation, it would be those that may have the greatest need. And, of course, here, too, you're looking at a variety of issues, such as insurance capabilities, standards of care, et cetera.
You're involved in the adaptation of this technology for the U.S. military. How is it being used?
Well, we're really not looking at implantable technologies as being able to create some capability with AI. What we're looking at here is the capability of implantable technology such as deep brain stimulation and even the type of thing that Mr. Musk is alluding to, where we have an interface between the superficial levels of the brain and a computer interface or machine interface, mostly to be able to compensate for neurodegenerative diseases, injuries to the brain, etc. Now, that's not to say that this cannot be used to perhaps augment or enable individuals to engage information processing, process information more quickly and more efficiently. But we're really not looking at the implantable technologies to do this as much as the non-invasive brain stimulatory technologies. For that very reason, they're non-invasive. They tend to be far safer with regard to the surgical procedures that aren't needed. And also, I think we're able to modulate the level of the input in different ways without having to worry about using surgery to get these things in and access to the brain.
Do you have concerns about how this could be abused?
Oh, of course. I think as with any type of science and technology, it is highly misusable and in some cases abusable. I mean, obviously, we're also dealing with a technology that is very new, and so we're having to open the door of questions of the unknown. We don't know what this technology is going to be able to do, and in many ways, that's part of the reason that we're going forward with this experimentally, because we're not only learning about the technology, we're learning about the brain, and then in learning about the brain, we're adapting our methods and technological tools. But I think when it's very early in its development, clearly one of the things we have to look at is, do we really understand the consequences of what we're doing? Do we understand that there may be some unanticipated effects? And are we prepared to consent patients to do that? And if we are prepared, do we also have the continuity of care and research in place so as to be able to take care of these individuals if and when something were to go wrong?
Okay. Well, James Giordano, thank you for your thoughts on all of this today.
My pleasure, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, so that's that video just from 6 years ago talking about this and some of the ethical concerns. And what we're talking about here is that, you know, inventors of evil things. And on the surface, it sounds wonderful to be able to help people who are having cognitive issues such as a dementia or something like that, or therapeutic to help people be able to move and do certain things that they couldn't do. But because of the wickedness of mankind in general, it can be easily used for other things. And that it gets into the ethical concerns that they talked about, but at the same time, they're still foraging ahead with it. And I thought about what the Lord said about how the end times would be like the days of Noah. And in that passage in Matthew 24, he was talking about at that time how we don't know the day and the hour of his coming, but he mentioned the days of Noah to say that they would be going about their usual business, eating, drinking, marrying, and being given in marriage. And, of course, we go to Genesis 6 to get a better picture of what they were doing and the wickedness. And one of the things that the Lord said about humans at the time is that in verse 5, Genesis 6, 5, he said the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And then we link that to Romans 1, 30 in particular. It's like it just, the capability, the possibility of abuses and misuses increase the more they push ahead with these things, because Romans 1 discusses man's rebellion against God, their rejection of him, and then him eventually turning man over to a debased mind. And it talks about, and from there it talks about all that, what that looks like. And these evil inventions are one of the things that it mentions in there. And as we just mentioned earlier, Elon is a transhumanist. He believes in these inventions as a way to do a whole number of things in addition to helping with therapeutics and those kinds of good things that they mentioned. But he wants to be able to perhaps upload consciousness to computers or improve cognitive abilities, the things that 6 years ago they say were not possible. They're still experimenting on doing these things. So now we're going to move on to more of the present. This next video was about a year ago, where They did this big unveiling. Ilion spoke and a lot of other people that are working on this Neuralink project about what the progress they've made through their animal experiments and how they were getting ready to move into human trials. And that was just a year ago when that was made. Now, the whole presentation is like a couple of hours, but we're going to listen to the Cliff Notes version, which is about 10 minutes.
Sake is one of the monkeys typing on a keyboard. But now, this is telepathic typing. So to be clear, this is he's not actually using a keyboard. He's moving the cursor with his mind to the highlighted key. Now technically, we can't actually spell, and so I don't want to oversell this thing. But what's really cool here is Sake the monkey is moving the mouse cursor, using just his mind, moving the cursor around to the highlighted key, and then spelling out what we want to spell. But this is something that could be used for somebody who's say a quadriplegic or tetraplegic human, even before we make the spinal cord stuff work. Is being able to control a mouse cursor, control a phone, and we're confident that someone who has basically no other interface to the outside world would be able to control their phone better than someone who has working hands.
Sounds great, doesn't it? But I'm always suspicious when they talk about for the good of mankind. It always starts with the best of intentions.
It's also important to show that Sake actually likes doing the demo and is not, like, strapped to the chair or anything. So the monkeys actually enjoy doing the demos because they get the banana smoothie and it's kind of a fun game. So, I guess what I'm trying to make is.
And they're actually showing videos of this monkey working this keyboard, and it's showing what words he's typing in. And in this one, he's asking for snacks. And then they on the screen, it looks like they're showing pictures of things, and I think he's going to pick whatever it is that he wants. So that's what they're demonstrating here.
I care a great deal about animal welfare, and I'm pretty sure, our monkeys are pretty happy, you know. So as you can see, he's a quick decision maker on the fruit front. So for the first two applications we're going to aim for in humans are restoring vision, and I think this is like notable in that even if someone has never had vision ever, like they were born blind, we believe we can still restore vision.
We can stimulate neural activity in the brain by injecting current through every channel. This is important because it allows us to bypass the eye and generate a visual image in the brain directly. In this image, I've highlighted the calcarine sulcus in red in an MRI. It contains a map of the visual world, the visual field. It's about surface area equal to a credit card on each side. One of the seminal discoveries was that every cell in the visual cortex represents only a tiny part of the visual field. Your perception is made up of a mosaic of tiny receptive fields, each belonging to a single cell in your visual cortex. So if you record from one of these cells in a monkey, say, in this location, you can find a very tiny region of the screen where a light stimulus will cause modulation of that neuron. This is a schematic of what a visual prosthesis using our N1 device might look like. A camera, the output from a camera, would be processed by an iPhone, for example, which would then stream the data to the device, and the image would be converted into a pattern of stimulation of the electrodes into visual cortex. With 1,000 electrodes, we might be able to produce an image resembling something that you see there on the right.
So our first steps along these dimensions for our device is what we call the N1 implant. It's a size of about a quarter, and it has over 1,000 channels that are capable of recording and stimulating. It's microfabricated on a flexible thin film array that we call threads. It's fully implantable and wireless, so no wires, and after the surgery, the implant is under the skin and it is invisible. It also has a battery that you can charge wirelessly, and you can use it at home. For implanting our device safely into the brain, we built a surgical robot that we call the R1 robot. It's capable of maneuvering these tiny threads that are only on the order of a few red blood cells wide, and inserting them reliably into a moving brain while avoiding vasculature. So here it is. That's our R1 robot with our patient Alpha, who is lying comfortably on the patient.
In this section, they're about to demonstrate how this robot is going to implant the Neuralink device in a brain, and it's a mannequin there with a something that approximates the human brain and that sort of thing. So that's what we're going to be listening to here.
This is what we call the targeting view. So what you're seeing is this is a picture of our brain proxy, and the pink represents the cortical surface that we want to insert our electrodes into, and the black represents the vasculature that we want to avoid. So this is another view real quick. On the left is the view of the insertion area, and on the right, what the robot's going to do is it's going to peel the array, the threads, one by one from its silicon backing and insert it into the target that we predetermine in the targeting view. So there you go. That's the first insertion.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Card. Earn unlimited.
So it showed it going into the actual brain tissue and inserting one of those fibers in. It's got different threads off of this little coin-shaped device is how it will be implanted.
So we're going to see a couple more insertions. The whole process of inserting about 64 threads in our first product is going to be around 15 minutes for this robot.
Since I joined in 2017, we've also done a handful of iterations to optimize the thread insertions of the robot. One of the challenges that we've had to face has to do with the optomechanical packaging. So as you can see here, there's about three primary optical paths that are really valuable for us to have reliable thread insertions. One is the visible imaging of the needle inserting the thread, and then another is the laser interferometry system called OCT, optical coherence tomography, that gives us the precise position of the brain while it's moving in real time. And then also we have to provide lighting and illumination to see what's going on in the visible light camera. And doing all this where the needle is at the bottom of the craniectomy, especially when it's close to the skull wall, can be pretty difficult to fit everything and be able to see it. So the way that the team solved this is by putting all three of these optical paths into one optical stack using photon magic or polarization, whatever you want to call it. And that enables us to do vessel avoidance in real time. So as I mentioned, the brain is moving, and where we place targets in the beginning may not be where you want to insert at the moment the needle is going down there. So the robot can actually detect the vessels and then determine if we're going to insert onto a vessel or not, if it's safe to insert, and then that way we can avoid inserting onto major vessels.
So for persons with spinal cord injury, the connection between the brain and the body is severed. The brain continues functioning normally, but it's unable to communicate with the outside world. You've already heard about how we can use the N1 link as a communication prosthesis to help someone with spinal cord injury control a computer or a phone, but it can also be used to reanimate the body. Let me show you how. If we could place electrodes into the spinal cord, say in a motor pool adjacent to lower motor neurons, we could stimulate those neurons, activating them, and in turn causing the muscle to contract and movement to occur. Here you can see a view from the R1 robot. it's a targeting view, and we've placed electrodes across many millimeters of the spinal cord. And the R1 robot is able to insert those electrodes deep into the ventral horn, into motor pools, in very close proximity to lower motor neurons. This is important because it allows them to have a localized connection to those neurons and activate very precise movements. Okay, so here's a pig walking on a treadmill, and you may have seen something like this before in a previous Neuralink presentation. But unlike before, this pig has more than one Neuralink device. There's a device in the brain, but there's also one in the spinal cord. And we can stream neural data from this device, these devices, in real time and use them to do things like decode the movement of the joints of the pig. So here you can see on the left a time series of the hip, knee, and ankle, and we're decoding those movements. So this is super cool, but that's actually not what we want to do. We want to go in the other direction. We would like to stimulate the spinal cord and cause movement to occur. Okay, so let's stimulate an electrode. So here's one electrode on one thread that when we stimulate causes a flexion movement of the leg. So on the left, you can see the movement of the joints, and you can also see the time series of the stimulation pattern in yellow. So the leg is moving up. Here's another electrode, which when we stimulate causes an extensor movement. This is actually a little harder to see because the leg is straightening and the hips are shifting, but if you look carefully, you can see how the leg is moving. We can stimulate on a great variety of threads and produce different movements and actually sequence them spatial-temporally to provide patterns. So on the left, you can see a time series of different stimulation on different electrodes. You can see the movements of the joints. And on the right, we're zooming in on muscle activity that gives us an idea of the kind of strength and power and specificity of those movements as well. So in addition to doing sequences, we can also achieve sustained movement. These are powerful muscle contractions of the sort that you might need for standing or other load-bearing activities and are really crucial for interacting through the world. We have a lot of work to do to achieve this full vision, but I hope you can see how the pieces are all there to achieve this. And if you find this prospect as exciting to you as it is to me.
So that's pretty much that video and what they were doing to the end, in the end with the pig experiment, where they were just sending signals through this device that would cause the animal to move and insert his legs and lower body at a certain way. So I guess their goal is to try to get it to where the signals from your brain or your thoughts can trigger these kinds of movements. Whatever you intend to do, they want that device to be able to transmit that to the limbs or whatever. So that's where they were at a year ago when they did this presentation. So now we're moving to a report that this video was uploaded 7 months ago, so we'll take a listen to this.
Elon Musk's Neuralink has received the green light from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for its human trial.
Have you ever wondered what the world would look like if our brains could directly connect to technology? Imagine a future where our thoughts become the controllers, replacing keyboards and touch screens with complete control over gadgets. That's what Neuralink promises to do. By the end of this video, you will discover how Neuralink plans to change the world. Let's start. What exactly is Neuralink? Neuralink is an innovative neurotechnology company that is at the forefront of creating a brain-computer interface with incredible potential. Their primary goal is to develop a highly advanced implantable device called the Link, which acts as a bridge between the human brain and computers. Imagine being able to control computers, machines, or even your surroundings with just your thoughts. Neuralink's vision is to make this a reality by allowing the human brain to communicate directly with external devices, opening up a world of possibilities. Launched in 2016 by Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla and SpaceX, along with Brian Johnson, an entrepreneur and owner of the NBA's Sacramento Kings. Together, they're driving the vision of merging the human brain with advanced technology for a better future. The main concept behind Neuralink is to ensure that if AI becomes too dominant, it doesn't pose a threat to society. The Link is a coin-sized brain chip, and it's the key component of Neuralink's BCI. Surgically embedded beneath the skull, this chip connects to the brain through an intricate network of thin, flexible threads equipped with 1,024 electrodes. How does Neuralink work? Neuralink's technology works like electrophysiology, which studies electrical signals in our...
You take the key. So this is just getting into human trials. Now, I think at this time they were recruiting for people, but another video we'll get into, they've actually implanted some of these devices in a human being.
Systems. The brain's neurons send these signals when they communicate with each other through synapses. They use electrodes or sensors to catch these electrical signals, measuring changes in spikes when the voltages fire or might fire. So they can capture our brain activity data when we actually do something, and even when we just think about doing it, turning our thoughts into actions. The recorded brain activity gets super complex, but they have machine learning algorithms and other artificial intelligence machines to make sense of all that information. It's similar to teaching computers to understand our brains and what we're up to. Now, picture yourself being able to do things you never thought possible, like having instant access to vast knowledge or learning new skills in a snap. Neuralink's tech aims to do just that, and it could change the way we see human intelligence and how we interact with the world. If this works out, it means anyone can upgrade their brain and become a real-life superhero. As long as we have access to AI, the possibilities are endless. How can Neuralink be used? There are many ways in which Neuralink can be used. Number one, mobility function. Neuralink's brain-computer interfaces have incredible potential. One of the ways it can be used is to restore mobility for people with paralysis or amputations. By connecting the brain to prosthetics or exoskeletons, they could regain some level of movement and independence. This gives them a way to control their bodies using just their thoughts. Number two, sensory and visual function. Neuralink's potential goes even beyond restoring mobility. It could offer hope to those with visual impairments as well. For people who have retinal injury or blindness due to eye injury, Neuralink aims to create a visual prosthesis. They can connect a camera directly to the visual cortex in the brain. Then, using thousands or maybe even tens of thousands of tiny electrodes, they could stimulate the brain to recreate a visual image. It's similar to watching a movie directly in your mind. Imagine the possibilities. Being able to see again, even after losing vision. It could truly be life-changing for those who have been living in darkness. Number three, it enhances communication. It can help people who can't speak or write by giving them a voice through technology. With Neuralink's brain-computer interface, they could control a virtual mouse or keyboard using just their thoughts. This means they can type messages or surf the web without needing to use their hands. For someone with paraplegia, this technology could be a game changer. They could express themselves, create digital art, and communicate with others using speech or text synthesis. Think about how hard it is to put our thoughts into words sometimes. With Neuralink, it might become much easier to express ourselves. Instead of struggling to find the right words, we could send our true thoughts directly to others. Number four, disease prediction and treatment. Neuralink's brain-computer interfaces promise to do even more. By keeping an eye on brain activity, they might help detect and treat various neurological conditions. Imagine living in a world where we can predict diseases before they even happen. With these brain-computer devices, we won't just be reading electrical signals, we'll also be able to detect chemical cues in the brain. They could spot changes in brain activity that might indicate epilepsy, bipolar disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, Alzheimer's, or Parkinson's disease. Not just that, they could also monitor mental health symptoms.
I'm just asking, and it's very tempting with this if you're blind or you're having neurological limitations. It's very tempting. I'm not going to say it's not to want something like this, but as they're talking about these possibilities for this device, do we really want someone else monitoring the things going on in our bodies to the extent where they believe any way they can read our very thoughts is a bit troubling when you think about it in those terms.
So if someone is experiencing burnout, fatigue, anxiety, or depression, Neuralink could step in and help. Number 5, it enhances cognitive abilities. Neuralink's brain-computer tech isn't just about fixing problems. It could also level up our brain power. It has the potential to boost our focus, memory, and attention by letting us train our brains with real-time biofeedback and other cool techniques. It's similar to having a personal brain coach right in your head, guiding you to becoming sharper and more focused. Imagine being able to improve your memory or concentration just by using this brain-computer interface. Elon Musk, the brain behind Neuralink, compares it to a Fitbit in your skull with all the sensors you'd find in a smartwatch. So, just like how a Fitbit tracks your physical health, this link could help us monitor and improve our mental fitness. Number 6. AI symbiosis. Elon Musk brings up a crucial point about our future with AI. As a species, we need to find a way to coexist with advanced artificial intelligence. He envisions a symbiotic relationship where AI becomes an extension of ourselves, like...
Just ask the question, why? Why do we have to do this?
Third layer on top of our emotions and thoughts. Having this AI symbiosis can be beneficial as it allows us to work together, combining the collective will of all humans to shape the world. It's like having a global brain that collaborates for the common good. Musk sees this as essential from a survival perspective. This way, we can achieve a positive AI symbiosis that can safeguard us from potential existential threats. The dark side of Neuralink. The brain chip technology, while promising, raises several concerning aspects that need careful consideration. One concerning aspect is its potential connection to animal abuse. In 2017, just a year after its inception, Neuralink collaborated with the University of California and the company's brain...
Honestly, I don't know why...
That whole thing about having all our minds linked together for the common good, I don't know if I like the sound of that either, because it's almost as if you hook up to this thing, you don't even have control over your own thoughts and feelings anymore. You're going to do what the collective tells you to do. It's like you become a mindless drone in a lot of ways.
At UC Davis's Primate Center through an agreement worth nearly $800,000. Disturbingly, internal documents obtained by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, an organization dedicated to ending animal testing, revealed the use of questionable methods during the experiments. According to the documents, researchers forcefully opened and drilled into the skulls of the animals to implant the chips. To make matters worse, an unapproved adhesive called BioGlue was utilized to seal the holes in their skulls. The aftermath of these surgical procedures was distressing, with the monkeys displaying signs of severe stress, exhaustion, and an array of physical ailments, such as diarrhea, open sores, vomiting, vaginal discharges, and even brain hemorrhaging. The report also shed light on the fact that experiments involving 86 pigs and 2 monkeys had to be repeated due to numerous human errors. This was attributed to the relentless pressure and rapid pace imposed by Elon Musk, who was pushing his team to work faster and harder, both publicly and privately. Additionally, the chip's vulnerability to hacking poses serious security risks, potentially leading to unauthorized access to our brain functions and compromising our privacy and autonomy. Also, the idea of humans merging with artificial intelligence in a dystopian scenario raises ethical and philosophical questions about the consequences of such a transformation. It blurs the line between humanity and technology, questioning what it means to be human and how our identities might change. The future of Neuralink. The future of Neuralink is both exciting and complex. Technology holds tremendous potential to revolutionize various aspects of human life, including healthcare, communication, and cognitive enhancement. The company has conducted successful testing on animals, such as monkeys playing video games with brain chips. Recently, Neuralink achieved a significant milestone by receiving clearance from the FDA to proceed with its first in-human clinical study. This marks a crucial step forward for the company's brain-computer interface technology. The human trial is a major milestone that could pave the way for new possibilities and discoveries. Despite these advancements, the commercial availability of Neuralink's brain implant may take several more years. The journey from clinical trials to widespread adoption can be lengthy and requires extensive testing and regulatory approvals. If you've made it this far, comment down below with the word 100% to confirm that you've received the...
Okay, and he's talking about how fast these things are being developed, but it can still be a long time away because of the length of human trials and stuff. But, hey, I'm thinking of recent events, and I'll just say, remember Operation Warp Speed? So... And how we're seeing how exponentially these things, this technology is growing and expanding. And it could be weeks, what they thought would take years. And that moves us to the news report we're going to listen to of they've actually implanted a chip in humans. So let's listen to this report from ABC News, which was just a couple of months ago when this first happened.
All right, in today's spotlight, billionaire Elon Musk announcing that his company, Neuralink, has implanted a wireless chip in a human brain for the first time. He says that person is recovering well, and the initial results show promising neuron spike detections. Musk says that Neuralink's first product would be called telepathy, and that its initial users would be people who have lost the use of their limbs. Neuralink received approval for human testing in May, and the company has been recruiting potential human test subjects for its clinical trial. They said they wanted to enlist people who are living with paralysis due to a spinal cord injury or ALS. I want to bring back our panel here, Mike Muse, John Katko, Christina Sinsoon Ramirez, and joining us is Dr. Leah Kroll, neurologist and assistant professor of neurology at Temple University. So thank you all for being here with us. And Dr. Kroll, let's start with you here. Tell us about the science behind this technology. I mean, Musk says essentially you could control a phone or a computer, I mean, just by thinking.
Yeah, this is very cool, very exciting science here. So basically the way it works is Neuralink designs a device that is a specialized sensor. The device gets implanted into the patient's brain, and then it reads the electrical signal that our brain cells are constantly sending to each other. Ultimately, those signals are what gets translated into action outside of the body. In this case in particular, we're talking about controlling computers and smartphones.
Wow. And what are your thoughts on, you know, how soon you could actually see this kind of technology, I mean, commonly available? Clearly it has to go through several trial phases.
Yeah, we're at the very beginning of the clinical trials here. So what I would say is probably within my lifetime as a physician, this can be something that I might be offering patients down the line. But for now, it's something in the future, years away at least.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, though, that is pretty quick. So, John, how important are these private enterprise research and development advances, and how we can ensure that, you know, that technology is being used then in an ethical way?
Yeah, first of all, it's just another example of how great this country is. When there's a need and the technology is there, people that are brilliant develop these products, and they're pretty good at mankind. I'm excited for this. I'm excited for AI, what that could do for research to find cures for terrible diseases like cancer. So it's a step in the right direction. We have to applaud it like the good professor just said, but let's make sure from an ethical and from a control standpoint, we don't let things get out of control with this stuff. That's all.
Yeah, and I know that's certainly something that you think about as well, Christina. And also, you know, the federal government at this point is not leading the charge on this kind of innovation with all the resources that these other agencies have.
Yeah, you know, it's a very strange world that we live in that we're even able being discussed this, and I'll usually be hard-pressed to congratulate Elon Musk or agree with much of his ideas, but on this technology, it really does have the power to improve people's lives, particularly speaking with people that may not be able to speak or hear or move their bodies, and so that's a huge step forward, and while we can celebrate that, I think we also have to realize that it could have its shortcomings, right, that when you have a big advance in technology or when you talk about AI, for example, you need to really do a cost-benefit analysis. Will the cost outweigh the benefits? And we need to make sure that the government is taking a larger role, rigorously testing, researching, and regulating potential falls and downfalls with this kind of technology.
Right. We're just at the beginning of this here, but, Mike, it still could be a game changer for people who suffer from paralysis, stroke victims, people who can't communicate. Do you want to put on your engineering hat for a second, Mike? Give us your take.
Kana, you know this is my favorite subject and topic right here. And Kana, as we discuss all the time, this is the artificial intelligence at its best. And if you look at the conversation we just had in the previous segment, looking at drones and the way that technology will be used in theater of war, how it can be used for that dynamic, but also can be used for good in terms of health advancement and moving forward. But in particular, this is what happens when you don't have overregulation that stifles the innovation that could produce such game-changing scenarios that can improve quality of life, not just for the individual, but for that individual's family. So they can have a two-way communication and they can lead a normalized life. And that is the power of technology when we don't have things that are too overregulated or canned, where we're not afraid of it. And we come from a place of how can we make sure that it is controlled so it doesn't do harm without allowing it to stifle innovations that continuously do good.
Yeah, and Dr. Kroll, I'd love to let you respond to that in terms of, you know, the overregulation that you can see sometimes, but what kind of regulation is needed if this were to work and if this were to be integrated into society?
This is going to open up some really interesting issues in that space. Just like with any medical device or medical treatment, the FDA will have a role in regulating this, right, when we talk about making sure the appropriate avenues have been gone down in terms of research and appropriate data collection, things like that, safety. But there's this kind of ethical technological overlay, particularly when AI comes into the picture, which it does with some of these brain-machine interfaces. And we're going to have serious discussions about how the medical community comes together with the legal community and the technological community and talks about how we can all regulate this in a safe way.
Absolutely. Mike, John, Christina, and Dr. Kroll, our thanks to you. And coming up here next in last.
Okay. So they've already started the human trials when it comes with this Neuralink, and it's interesting that they've given it the name telepathy. And, of course, telepathy is the idea of being able to transmit, to communicate with someone else or something, in this case computers and other technology, just through your thoughts. We see a lot of that on TV and some of the science fiction programs of people that have this ability to telepathically communicate with others. One that comes to mind, it was actually a scary movie based on the book by Stephen King called The Shining, where the little boy in the movie had this telepathic ability where he could communicate just using his mind. And in the movie, he happened to run into someone else that was able to do the same thing. And so while the other person is talking to someone else, he and the little boy are talking to one another just using their mind. So that's an idea of what telepathy is. So I think it's interesting that they gave it this name. What we're going to look at next is a video from a month ago of the person who was implanted with this device and what they're doing and how they're doing.
I'm in live here. Hello, world. How's it going out there? My name is Bliss, and I'm an engineer at Neuralink. And I'd like to introduce you to the first ever user of the Neuralink device. And I think you're my only telekinetic friend that they have.
Yeah, I hope so.
Not many more of those out there. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Nolan Arbaugh. I'm 29.
And I was just going to say, mention the word telekinetic, and from what I've looked up, they're slightly different from telepathy. Telekinesis is the ability to move things and move objects with your mind.
So, about 8 years ago, I was in kind of a freak diving accident and dislocated my C4, C5, so I'm a complete... quadriplegic. So I'm paralyzed from below the shoulders. I have no sensation or movement below my level of injury, so below my shoulders. Yeah, that about covers it, right?
Do I need to do some of your dogs here? Let me put the camera
up. Yeah, absolutely.
You got dogs all over the place.
Yeah, that's Montana. The one walking by is Grace. Gracie!
Gracie, come here.
Hi, Grace.
How's it going, Gracie? Yeah. All right.
This is what people
yeah, they're just here for the dog. All right, yeah, so while he's been introducing himself, let me just put the camera on so you can see what Nolan's been doing.
Yeah.
Let me come over here. Do you want to explain a little bit what's going on here?
Yeah, so I love playing chess, and so this is one of the things that y'all have enabled me to do, something that I wasn't able to really do much the last few years. Especially not like this. I had to use like a mouse stick and stuff, but now it's all being done with my brain. If y'all can see the cursor moving around the screen, that's all me, y'all. It's pretty cool, huh?
Actually, can you pause the song just for the audio coming through? And that was also done with your brain?
Yep. It's all brain power up there.
Can you explain a little bit just to people who maybe don't have any context on this field or what's going on here? How are you able to actually move the cursor?
Yeah, so we started out with trying out a few different things. We basically went from what we call kind of differentiating, like imagined movement versus attempted movement. So a lot of what we started out with was attempting to move. So I would attempt to move, say, my right hand, left, right, forward, back to move. And from there, I think it just became intuitive for me to start imagining the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on a cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen, and it would move where I wanted to, which was such a wild experience.
This guy wants to know if you feel like a wizard.
Yeah, right. It's crazy. It really is. It's so cool. I'm so freaking lucky to be a part of this and stuff. I mean, I just, every day it seems like we're learning new stuff, and I just can't even describe how cool it is to be able to do this.
Do you want to briefly talk about a little bit, I guess, what have you been using this for outside of these sort of research sessions or when you're just playing chess? What are some of the things you've been getting value from this from?
Yeah, so one of the first times y'all gave me complete control over this, I actually stayed up until, geez, I don't know, like 6 a.m. playing Civilization VI. It was worth it, I guess is the best way to put it. It was awesome. I had basically given up on playing that game just because of how, I mean, it's a big game, and the amount of time that it takes to sit in on it it's just a lot, and I have to worry about a lot of things, getting pressure sores and things like that, so I just wasn't really able to play it as much as I wanted to, and y'all gave me the ability to do that again, and I played it for, geez, like 8 hours that day, so I do that,
it's 6 p.m. to like 2 a.m.
Yeah,
or something.
It was a lot.
I'm giving you all my bad habits, man.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it was awesome. So I did that. I read. I like learning languages. I'm learning, like, Japanese right now. I'm learning a bit of French.
Maybe for the audience who isn't super familiar with assistive technology, why couldn't you play Civ before? What was tricky about that, or what was it about Neuralink that made that possible for you?
Yeah, so one of the big things, honestly, was that I think I just got checkmated. The only way I could play it was through pad, and that didn't allow me to play online at all, so that kind of sucked to begin with.
Would you play that like at 2 a.m. before, or what was the
reason? Oh no, there was no way. There was no way for me to do that, because when I'm sitting up playing on, say, like my iPad or something, I need complete help from, say, my like parents or something to do it, I just didn't have that capability to like keep them up all night. That's just not something I would ever want to do. So basically, I would have to go down and everyone went to bed in my house, my brother, my parents, something like that. And then on top of that, I can only play for a few hours at a time because, you know, I have to worry about pressure sores and stuff. I have to be readjusted. I have to do weight shifts, things like that. Just things that come with being a quadriplegic and stuff. So it just wasn't really feasible for me to, like, say, play a full game or anything. And now I can literally just lie in bed and play to my heart's content. Honestly, the biggest restriction at this point was, like, having to wait for the implant to charge once I use all of it. So play for 8 hours, have to get off and let it charge for a while, and then hopefully be able to play some more. But it's been awesome. It's been so cool. And I'm kicking ass, too. So.
In the chess game, too. Okay.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to win this chess game, but we'll see.
And then maybe just one final question. Your mom was showing me a bunch of pictures of you in different Halloween costumes over the years, something that
yeah.
you go nuts on. So now that you have, like, actual, you know, force control over stuff, I guess that opens up the possibility space there. But what are you thinking to dress up as this year?
I mean, something my friends and I have been wanting to do for a while. I think I'm going to be Professor X. I think that's pretty fitting. Not only because he's in a wheelchair, and I think that just obviously fits perfectly, but now I'm actually a telekinetic, basically. Yeah, and so it's going to be cool. It's going to be real cool. My friends and I are really excited about it.
You're
going to
freak people out when you trick or treat.
I know, right?
Okay, I think that's it for today. Anything else
yeah.
you wanted to add before signing off?
Mm.
We got more work to do. A lot to learn about the brain here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect. I would say that we have run into some issues. I don't want people to think that it is, like, this is the end of the journey. There's still a lot of work to be done. But it has already changed my life, and I think that people who are thinking about, say, applying for the human trials or are thinking about, you know, finding some way to help out with this, to, you know, do your part. And that's the reason I got into it, was because I just wanted to help. I wanted to be a part of something that I feel like is going to change the world. I think, like, there's nothing to be afraid of with that. The surgery was super easy. I literally was released from the hospital a day later. I have no, like, cognitive impairments. Well, I guess none that were caused by the surgery.
I beat you in chess, like, once, so, yeah.
Yeah, I do have a pretty good record in
yeah.
chess right now. As far as just, like, yeah. But, yeah, I just think that it's really awesome. I want to thank Neuralink for doing this, for working hard every day to make this, you know, a reality. I think that they are going to change the world. Be a part of it. So thanks, guys. And I'm looking forward to releasing some of the going on.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to end here. But, yeah, we're going to plan to release more in the coming days. So if you want to stay in touch with what's going on here and hear more from Nolan and his work, just yeah, follow along here on Twitter. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. See y'all.
Okay, so that's the first Neuralink implant patient, and he seems to be doing well. And as I said, it's a dilemma because if you're someone or you're a caretaker for someone who is paralyzed or blind, these things can be tempting, but as believers in Christ, we definitely have to be cognizant of the fact that these things can be used and taken control of by the government or whoever else is monitoring these things. So just keep that in mind as we look at this technology and also the beliefs and the philosophies of some of the individuals that are inventing and financing these things, like an Elon Musk. So the next video that we're going to look at is going to be where they're starting trials now on the blind. So we'll look a little, look at some of this for the time that we have left, because that now they're going to start trials on that aspect of it as far as helping with blindness. So let's give a listen.
Already changed my life, and I think that people who are thinking about, say, applying for the human trials.
What the heck is going on with Neuralink? After allowing the first patient to play chess for 8 hours just by thinking, Elon Musk continued to announce the launch of a second product called Blindsight after the big success of telepathy. Hope for a series of blind patients now lies in the N1 chip, or more precisely, 1,024 electrode fibers that will be able to regain sight through GoPro. So why is Neuralink establishing a new technological universe? Welcome to Tesla Car World. Please show your support by subscribing and ringing that bell. Now let's get started with today's content. Musk has been able to keep his promise with Neuralink. Several years ago, Elon Musk declared that Neuralink would be able to restore vision in blind individuals. He was confident in Neuralink's capabilities. Following the outstanding success of the first case controlling a computer mouse with thoughts, this genius has now announced Neuralink's next product, Blindsight. True to its name, Neuralink's next device will restore or recover vision. How does Neuralink Blindsight work? In November 2023, Elon Musk shared that Neuralink was researching a vision chip, but it would take a few more years to be ready. At that time, the company was focused on obtaining FDA regulatory approval for the first human trials. Now we don't have to wait much longer to witness this technological marvel, as just under 5 months since Musk's revelation, Blindsight has emerged. Now, do you believe that a person born blind or who has never seen light will be able to gain sight? Regarding Blindsight and the capabilities of this product, Musk said during a Neuralink show and tell in 2022, the first two applicants we're going to aim for in humans are restoring vision. And I think this is notable in that if someone has never had vision ever, like they were born blind, we believe we can still restore vision. The visual part of the cortex is still there. Even if they've never seen before, we're confident they could see. It wouldn't be wrong to say that Neuralink represents the most advanced technology in the history of human development. To describe the process of restoring vision with the N1 chip would be to divulge proprietary information of the company. Therefore, we can only outline how Neuralink will apply it with Blindsight. In essence, our brain's cortex is highly intricate, consisting of nerve cells divided into various central control regions. The frontal region is associated with high-level cognitive functions such as decision-making and creativity. The top portion regulates movement and muscle sensation, and the visual cortex is located at the back. Initially, the N1 Neuralink chip is implanted into the visual cortex, located at the back of the skull. This invasive process is naturally carried out by the R1 robot, ensuring precision and safety. At this point, 1,024 small electrodes will directly stimulate nerve cells within the retinal structure. This simulation mimics light signals, aiding the brain in forming images. The brain will then process signals from the Neuralink device to generate images. The truth is, these images may not be entirely clear like normal vision, but they can help the blind recognize objects in the environment around them. Musk has confirmed this by stating that initially, everything might be akin to Nintendo graphics and will improve over time. For the blind, the chip in the brain will communicate with 64 tiny threads surgically implanted into the visual cortex by the Neuralink surgical robot. Never underestimate these threads. Even though they may be thin, measuring only a few millimeters, they have a large surface contact area thanks to all the folds in their structure. Each thread contains 16 electrodes, amounting to a total of 1,024 electrodes functioning as both inputs and outputs for the N1 device. Through this setup, Neuralink can receive signals and directly generate images in the brain. In another scenario where Neuralink can input images into the patient's brain, users will have to wear a GoPro-style digital camera, which will wirelessly transmit image data directly via Bluetooth to a mobile device. Subsequently, the phone will convert that image data into neurosignals, which are then embedded back into the Neuralink chip. The chip will then transmit these neural signals into the brain, allowing you to see the images displayed on the phone. Of course, this case will be challenging and will require much more research and time. How has Neuralink successfully experimented with blindsight on animals? The blindsight system is already working in monkeys, Mr. Musk has now claimed. Resolution will be low at first, like early Nintendo graphics, but ultimately may exceed normal human vision, he said. He also stressed that no monkey has died or been seriously injured by a Neuralink device. Neuralink has faced criticism from regulators and animal rights groups over its treatment of the monkeys that are a key part of its experimental work. Talking about this experiment before, another experiment performing imaging data captured by a camera into the monkey's visual cortex, this experiment demonstrated that the monkeys perceive virtual light rays as being in different locations. It's a technology that Neuralink hopes will create a prosthetic visual system for blind individuals in blindsight. We all know that the first generation Neuralink technology, dubbed telepathy, used 1,024 electrodes. However, Neuralink has introduced next-generation models with over 16,000 electrodes. This makes sense because to restore vision, we need a stronger chip with a greater number of electrode arrays. Neuralink researcher Adams stated that the increased number of electrodes will significantly improve the fidelity of the images that a blind person can perceive. Adams also mentioned, if you put a device on both sides of your visual cortex, that would give you 32,000 points of light to make an image in someone who's blind. Yeah, we can't know for sure which specific chip details Elon Musk will decide to use for blindsight, but hopefully it'll be an upgraded version compared to the first patient. Continuing from telepathy, Adams is striving to package camera data into a format compatible with the brain and transmit it directly to the visual cortex. He demonstrates his description by stating, "Our goal will be to turn the lights on for someone who spent decades living in the dark." How successful is telepathy Neuralink when allowing the first patient to play chess by thinking? It's no surprise to talk about Elon Musk's bold ambition in his ventures. In fact, both attraction and criticism are inevitable. Anyone who has followed Musk over the years realizes that he and his companies frequently face criticism. However, this seems to have changed, at least to some extent, when Neuralink recently announced a significant update regarding patient one, the first patient in the trial. Blish Chapman, an engineer from Neuralink, and Neuralink patient Nolan Arbaugh participated together in an intimate live presentation aimed at introducing how the brain-computer interface works, the company's groundbreaking device that's been making waves with Musk's shares about this patient's remarkable recovery after the implantation surgery. Arbaugh, a 29-year-old man paralyzed from the shoulders down with spinal cord injuries at C4 and C5 vertebrae, and worse, a complete loss of sensation in his body, arms, and legs after a horrifying driving accident. He's the individual who's seen significant improvements since applying the telepathy Neuralink in January of last year. We were particularly surprised by the age of this patient because in previous episodes we discussed how Neuralink selects cases, with the early trials undoubtedly prioritizing younger individuals to enhance recovery rates, as well as better resilience. However, what truly astonished us to the point of gaping was the ability to play chess using thoughts facilitated by Neuralink through telepathy. The surgical procedure leaked to last 30 minutes. Arbaugh did not require general anesthesia, and postoperative invasion only left a small scar on the scalp. During the surgery, a robot will remove a small piece of the skull and connect thread-like electrodes to pre-identified areas of the brain. These electrodes will record waves and transmit wirelessly to his iPad. As Arbaugh noted, the ability to move and interact with technology through Neuralink has been life-changing. So much so that the 29-year-old admitted that the first thing he did with his brain-computer interface device was to play Civilization VI all night, or rather for 8 hours until the implant's battery ran out. He only needed to stare at a particular spot on the screen, and then he could place the mouse wherever he wanted. Not only does he put...
This app on my phone called Audible helps...
Yes, but he also successfully plays Mario Kart just by thinking. What was especially impressive in the demo was that Arbaugh seemed to have quite impressive control, directing his racer not only to turn, but how far to turn, showing a similar level of control finesse. For example, he can shoot down another player in the demo video. Before the implant, Nolan had to use a mouse stick to control his laptop. Luckily, he's now using a Bluetooth signal, which transmits from a small computer chip in his head directly to his iPad. Nolan explains his process of learning how to use Neuralink and what a learning experience it was for everyone, because the engineers who developed the product for nearly a decade were never able to hear feedback about using their device. Of course, what Nolan achieves may seem effortless to any of us, but Nolan can only utilize devices such as computers and iPads while seated in his chair and requires constant care to adjust his weight and ensure he won't encounter pressure-related issues. The wireless connectivity in Neuralink enables him to work and play games while lying in bed, where he can be alone for hours on end. This provides him with a level of independence that was previously unattainable without the implant. Imagine a not-so-distant future where Nolan Arbaugh can move a motorized wheelchair with his thoughts, much like Professor X and X-Men. It's truly mind-boggling. With Neuralink, it's not too far-fetched to say that he'll regain much of the lost freedom he once had. Furthermore, there's a good chance he might bid farewell to his wheelchair with Neuralink because at least we know that Neuralink can address issues related to spinal cord injuries. While it may not enable him to walk or run normally, at least this technology holds promise in reducing his reliance on the wheelchair. As the Wall Street Journal pointed out, moving a computer cursor isn't a big technical leap for brain-computer interfaces. An older brain chip first implanted in a human in 2004 also helped a paralyzed person move a cursor with only their thoughts. The older chip, however, needed to be attached to a device on the outside of the brain to transmit data, which required wires sticking out through the skin. Neuralink's wireless connection between the chip and the laptop seems to be particularly special. It's not perfect, Arbaugh admitted at the end of the video. I'd say we ran into some issues. I don't want people to think that this is the end of the journey. There's still a lot of work to be done, but it has already changed my life. How is Neuralink evaluated by the media after successful telepathy? Surprisingly, the media attention surrounding Neuralink's demonstration of brain-computer interface has been quite positive, in stark contrast to the initial skepticism when Elon first introduced the technology. Even media outlets like CNBC acknowledged that for companies like Neuralink, this is a great time to exist. TMZ also shared a similar perspective, with a host of this media outlet acknowledging the potential benefits of Neuralink for humanity. Peter Diamandis, founder and chairman of XPRIZE, also lauds this significant milestone. In an interview with CNBC, Diamandis noted that this is just the beginning. He also emphasized that the rate of exponential acceleration means that over the next 10 years, we're going to see as much progress as we've seen in the last 100 years. Such sentiments are not far-fetched. One only needs to look at the significant milestones of Tesla and SpaceX over the last decade to see that companies led by Musk tend to develop and innovate rapidly.
Okay, we'll leave it there for now with this video, but it's very interesting, and it seems that through Neuralink, Elon wants to do similar things as what the Lord did in the Bible. When I'm thinking of a passage where a couple of disciples of John the Baptist came and asked Jesus, "Are you the Messiah, or should we look to another?" And Jesus told them to go back and tell John the things that they've seen, of which the blind see and the lame walk. And those are the same things that are being targeted by this implant. And it just kind of made me think of how the scriptures tell us that when the lawless one comes, according to the working of Satan, he's going to have all power, signs, and lying wonders. So is technology going to be a part of those lying wonders? Because sometimes we do look at these medical advances as miracles, but we but the credit goes to the inventors of the technology or the doctors. I kept noticing Nolan, the young man, kept crediting them for the things that he can do now and not God. So I just thought that was interesting. The biggest thing for us as believers is to stay sober and vigilant, prayerful, continue to study the word, and also preach the gospel to all that need to hear it, to the lost, the people that we come into contact in our daily comings and goings mostly. And I think that's been my time, and I thank you so much for yours. We're going to pick this up next time, and I have a great rest of your day and your weekend, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.